Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM. And joining me this week in place of Vas Larikos, our normal host, is Matt Ruff. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Ken. I would have liked to seen the Ravens play better, and would have liked to seen the O's play this year with Grayson Rodriguez and Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish healthy all year. But You don't always get what you want, do you, Ken?
No, we went to the game today and it was exciting. Povich pitched well. They beat the Pirates for the third straight game. They've been walking a lot of games off. This is something I found interesting. The Ravens, the Orioles have walked off four of the last five games. And this has got to be one of the only records, the only team records that involves 1954 in any way. But the 1954 team was the only other team in Orioles history to walk off four out of five games. So you got to play home games for starters, obviously, to get a walk off. Mm-hmm. And they did it on this six game homestand. They walked off four of the first five, but in 1954, from June 23rd to 27th, they walked off four to five against Boston one time, and Kansas City, the Philadelphia A's were absolutely awful at the time. They were the last place team in the American League. They did it to them three times. So there's nothing left of that 1954 team. It's kind of like trying to get people to tell you what the 1996 Ravens were like at this point.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, nobody knows. It's like history started for us in 2000. History started for us for the Pittsburgh Steelers with the Immaculate Reception. There's nothing before that. So interesting. All right. So obviously very frustrating game against the Bills. The kind of game that I think gets a lot of people either screaming profanity at the TV set or cursing under their breath over their roll. What were your thoughts about it?
Yeah, this game, it wasn't close to similar in how it actually lined up, but the feeling that I had in my gut was the two 14-point leads that they blew against the Patriots back, I think it was in the Kubiak year, which I think that was 2014 in the playoffs.
Yep.
Where I believe they were going to DoorDash for corners, and they were severely injured on the cornerback side. But it was just the most helpless feeling at the watching that game, and you knew that team was really, really good and well coached. And watching this game, I know we've had our fair share of leads blown that we got to watch, but it really just brought me back to that game, and that game was a horror show for me. So, you know, as I'm thinking about this game, right, there's you don't want to overreact and panic, right? Because it's only one game. At the same time, it's a disturbing trend that the team seems to be following over the past 3 to 4 years, which is scary. We couldn't stop a nosebleed, right? The defense got tired, but even with the defense getting tired, you know, it just, there were so many things from the end of the first half, that second quarter, they just couldn't even keep the guy in bounds, right? And Marlon Humphrey said that I think they had practiced that play in practice and just they couldn't execute it. And so, you know, you have a ton of high priced talent on defense. You've got a lot of first round draft picks on defense, whether or not the Ravens drafted them or not. And it almost seems like you're at the point where, do we need to score on every possession? And it just, it's such a crazy thought right now. You know, the rational person inside of you will say, look, this was Josh Allen. This was the Bills. This was their home opener. We scored on four or five or six plays basically every time we touched the ball. And it was almost felt like the equivalent of going, you know, three and out or six and out, right? And even though we were putting up seven, we were still getting them the ball back, and that really tanked our defense. So I don't want to overreact, but there's definitely something in the DNA of this team and this coaching staff where there seems to be a level of conservatism that they play with on both offense and defense, and really hoping that they can figure out what they need to do. I don't know if it's almost just play to max aggression or something to that effect. But before I go any further, Ken, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, a frustrating loss for certain. I'm probably the same as the most extreme people, obviously, are being mapped to that. I'm like, you know, it does happen. And I said, no, it's happened 100 times. You don't understand. It's terrible. It's terrible. Well, it wasn't good. Nobody's claiming it was. The game, it kind of reminds me of, this is a 2003 Seattle game, mm-hmm. which was a horrific loss for Seattle, but its script is almost exactly flipped in terms of the mm-hmm. The lead, the late time in the fourth quarter, and the clock error, which was you know, there's a clock controversy, we'll call it, in both halves. There's a big tipped ball in each game, you know, a completion of for 44 yards on fourth and 28 that went the Ravens' way. They've won games like this. They've had some remarkable wins in the playoffs too. They haven't just lost games in the playoffs. The people who want to blame Harbaugh, they can go ahead and do that. And I think that every additional data point is certainly damning with regard to Harbaugh. He's, you know, I'll give you the big one this week is Harbaugh's never lost as an 11-point favorite. And they're 11.5-point favorites right now against Cleveland. That might hold up. It might not. But if it does hold up, you know, it would be the first ever in his case. And there've been most other great coaches have lost several games under those circumstances. And you should have about a, I think the line is saying that you win about 13 cents on a dollar bet if you bet the Ravens on this one. So you should win that, what, 8 out of 9 times, 7 out of 8 times, whatever it would be. It's in that range, but not, you know, the 26-0 or 28-0 or whatever Harbaugh is right now. So it'd be interesting. This would not be a good game to follow up with a start of similar nature that people are going to be comparing to the 2024 start, where they, you know, they lost to a great team on the road, and then they lost to a terrible team at home in the Raiders and then the Browns, who I don't know if we know how terrible they're going to be, but they're not a good team. I think that's fair to say. So it would be bad, certainly, if it came to that again. If they win this game, I think they're probably off to a better start than last year. But you know, yeah, at 1-1, but it's still going to be a very tough climb for them in this early season to get back into the race.
Yeah, certainly a tough hill to climb. A couple other thoughts I had. It's crazy the ways that they invent to lose, right? The coaching staff's good, the GM, the team is good, the players are good, yet this team can just find ways to lose. I mean, it's sloppy special teams play where you're, you know, Trenton Simpson's knuckle is over the white line, but why did he jump on that thing like he was trying to, you know, ride a lion in the prairie? I mean, just so many small things, so many big things. You know, they've admitted they've practiced, like John said, they always teach, do not leave your feet within the 5-yard line, right? When you're trying to down a punt. Yet that's what Trenton Simpson did, right? So you have young players making dumb mistakes, but you also have the Zay Flowers fumble against the Chiefs in the playoffs. You have the Derrick Henry fumble in this game or against the Steelers, which was pretty damning last year, right? I think it was his only fumble of the year. So, you know, it's like if you were to say, hey, this is what we brought Henry in for, let's give him the rock, you know, even that ends up in a fumble. And, you know, it's just it's incredible how this team invents ways to lose. It still doesn't shake my confidence that they can win it all. I'm just a little worried that some of it's in their DNA, right? I'm not coming here and saying this is all on Harbaugh or this is all on Lamar or this is all on EDC, because frankly, the pie chart of blame is so scattered, right? Like, you can't say this is just on the rookies or this is just on the vets. I mean, they do an amazing job of, if you look at the, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 big ones that they've lost, right, where they've been up and they've lost, or even just close competitive games or even the playoff games, the blame is so evenly spread. It's shocking. But anyway, I really don't like that, the feeling that we can't stop anyone. I felt like that in the Raiders game last year when Brock Bowers and Devontae Adams were going buck wild. And I don't know what they need to do to be able to find a way to put the brakes on when they're a little bit gassed and a little tired. I don't know if it's activating another pass rusher, whether it be a defensive lineman or an outside linebacker. But it
isn't anything like that. I'm just going to say it's not an activation of another defensive player that would make the difference. They're good players. We're gassed as hell at the end of that game. It's something,
right,
you know, when you've got a bunch of good players that are gassed, you just no amount of like one additional marginal player that's going to make you good enough on defense to stop them. And when you're in that situation, I thought that was one of the reasons why, even when the basic math said go for it without any consideration of what was going on with the team, I thought that was the big additional reason, was that they couldn't stop anyone. There's no one they could stop under those circumstances. Reminded me of the Christmas night 2016 game where they had a chance to run the clock out, and they would have taken some risk to do it and score later than they did. Go back and look at that game if you want to. Mm-hmm. It's 12-25-16. That's the game, but it cost the Ravens a playoff spot.
We'll never forget.
Yeah, we will never forget. Yeah, it's we're on 9/11, and we'll never forget 12-25-16. So, but anyway, it was an awful loss where the Ravens had just given up consecutive drives of, I think it was 75 and 90 yards, where they got beaten up for 15 yards of play. Nobody, I mean, they just had no hope of stopping anybody. And the Steelers' defensive line completely hurt, and they could have run right over them. They Juszczyk did not go down at the 1 yard line, and the Ravens end up losing that ball game on the immaculate extension, as it's known now, added in Pittsburgh. So, ugly loss. I'm moving on to the Browns right now. Let's talk some general manager stuff. So, $8 million freed up today with the Roquan Smith restructure. The Ravens were perilously close to no cap remaining. They needed to do some. So they moved $9 million, I believe. Well, it might have been $8 million of his salary into bonus under what's known as a simple restructure. A simple restructure, by the way, all that means is you're converting a portion of the salary of a player into bonus instead, into signing bonus. And typically contracts are structured so that those sorts of simple restructures are allowed without unilateral decision by the club. Effectively, you're just giving Roquan his $9 million or the $9 million of the money that he would earn this year in advance, rather than make him wait for weekly checks. And the accounting impact to that is that it gets passed into future years, dispersed over the remainder of the contract. So and a move that was probably necessary. I'm not sure the Ravens really wanted to do it, but it is one that creates some potential dead cap for the team in future years.
Yeah. Yeah, again, simple restructure, just pushing the money out into the future. Maybe it allows them to do something like sign, a player, but they needed the flexibility, you know, as they're entering into the season here. I will say, I don't think I am qualified to truly state this, but Roquan seems to have lost a little bit, maybe a half a step. I'm not saying he's terrible or he's finished. I'm not blaming the whole game on him. He missed a bad tackle. That happens to everybody. But I don't like continually pushing Roquan's money out, because I don't know what he's going to look like in 2 or 3 years.
Well, I agree. I don't like it either. I didn't like doing it with Odell Beckham, where I think the situation is a lot more dire than with Roquan. Roquan is still a reigning three-time first-team All-Pro, right? So, I mean, we're a little bit further removed from the misery that is Odell and the $10 million we're still paying this year for Odell Beckham in 23. Uh-huh. So, Anyway, it is what it is. I think one of the reasons they might have gone for money, because normally I would think they would need about $5 million to get through the rest of the season from this point. But they went for bump their cap up to about $9 million of availability. Mm-hmm. But we just saw that Jadeveon Clowney made a little trip down to Dallas. Everybody thought he would sign. He left the building without a contract, and reportedly the decision was his and Dallas was in on signing him. Now, if you're Jadeveon Clowney, do you want to play in Dallas?
I don't think I want to play there at all. You know, I don't think they're better than the Eagles, right? I don't think they're better than the Commanders. So if you've got two teams in your division that are better than you, plus you've got other, you know, you got the Packers out there, you've got, you know, some of the other, you got the Lions, you know, I don't think that even with Clowney, I'm not sure the Cowboys are really in even the top eight teams in the NFC. I know Clowney has made some money. I know he's spent some money. I think there was a funny comment that he made that, you know, he told his mom, we got to stop spending money because the money's not coming in like it used to. So he had given his mom a clothing allowance each month, and he told her that was going to have to stop. So there's a difference between making, you know, you're on a 50 or $75 million deal versus you're going year to year on, you know, $2 to $6 million deals, still more money than we make. But, I think that if I'm Clowney, I want to play for a contender. You know, I want to play for the Ravens. I want to play for the Chiefs. I want to play for the Eagles, the Packers, right? There's some pretty clear good teams out there. The Bills would be a great one. And I also think that Clowney's shortening the season for himself personally. He's never liked the training camp off-season nonsense. And I also don't think it's a bad thing either to, if I'm an older vet and I want to keep playing, you know, why not miss the first three games of the season? You know, just save your body.
There are reasons why not, because you may end up with NLTBEs in your contract that can't end up being earned. You may end up with by coming in week two that the Ravens can cut you in week 14 when they realize their season is gone, which is a possibility. I mean, we have to admit that. And, you know, they want to move on from you, or you don't play that well and they want to move on from you. So all those are possibilities. You end up maybe costing your money, but I do agree with you that Clowney is a habitual camp avoider, and definitely does not seem to like that. Let's move forward. I'll talk a little bit about the injury report for today, because I for my money, it's probably not a really good injury report, even though it has one good name on it. So Jaire Alexander yesterday limited on Wednesday. He's back to full practice on Thursday. I know a lot of you are saying, yay, after they allowed, you know, over 10 yards per play, or actually 9.9 yards per play with him in there in the last game. Isaiah Likely is still DNP, and Patrick Ricard is still DNP. So that's just disturbing is not the right word. It's kind of sucks that they haven't moved forward to a limited, say, participation. I think Harbaugh said that Ricard had a chance to practice some this week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Alexander, I think he's going to be limited for a while. I just don't think he's going to be practicing fully, maybe even throughout the whole year. I did like that he played. I don't think he was quite ready, but I liked that he wanted to play, but I don't know if you can make a pretty good argument that he should have been held out. And I don't know if TJ Tampa would have done much worse, being a fresh set of legs, but hopefully he'll get his legs underneath him. He'll start to learn the defense, and hopefully it's only up from here for Jaire. On the Ricard front, I certainly want to get him back healthy. I thought Mitchell Payton made some pretty good blocks. I think Mitchell Payton has pretty good size at roughly, 6'5", 255, 254, something like that he's listed at. And I like the speed he had relative to Ricard, but he didn't have the blocking prowess of Ricard. And in fact, almost no one would. But I agree with you. I'd like to see Ricard and Likely getting back soon. I think we both agree that we didn't want them back for the Cleveland game, but we would like to see them getting on the practice field and starting to work up to being able to play, because it doesn't get easy after the Browns, right? You have the Lions, you have the Chiefs, you have the Rams. I believe you have the Texans. So would like to see these guys getting on the practice field sooner than later and really contributing to the team.
Yeah, with you on that. One more person on the injury report we got to talk about. And this is the one that's uncomfortable. Is Nnamdi Madubuike was out yesterday with an ankle problem. Apparently, something he received treatment for after the game. He was back limited yesterday. I assume he will play. Obviously, that would be an enormous loss if he did not. He was one of the Ravens' best offensive defensive players, and both he and Jones really left it on the field as a pass rushing tandem. Also was run stoppers in the game. A really nice game from Travis Jones in particular, stopping a couple consecutive run plays to get the field Bills off the field on second and one. So the second one, then third and one, that normally could be a tush push down. They ran it otherwise and were stuffed for a 2-yard loss when they might have gone again on fourth down if they had just gotten no gain on the play. So really nice key plays for Jones in the game. He also phone boothed the pocket on Madubuike's sack, so he did a good job setting up that. And it would be an enormous loss if he can't play. I assume that Peebles would be the three tech that they would move to and not Washington, but I guess we'd have to see.
Yeah, that do not like seeing Madubuike with an ankle injury. He and Travis Jones played a lot of snaps in that game. They really played a lot of snaps. I would love to see if they could limit that a little bit more. Were you surprised, Ken, that Peebles didn't get a few more snaps, just considering how tired the defense was, or even John Jenkins in those last, three drives in the fourth quarter?
So, okay. Jenkins, they don't really want on the field on a passing down is my take on the situation. So if as long as you think the run is a significant risk, then it's okay to have John Jenkins on the field, but he's just not going to help you as much on passing downs. Plus, when they're the most important plays, you want Jones and Madubuike out there, period. So you want Jones instead of Jenkins. So I wasn't really shocked, but I would think in a 78 snap game, you see a little bit more Jenkins. It was a neutral game script for a good portion of the game. The Ravens didn't lead by 2 touchdowns the whole way or anything. You know, they led 20-13 at halftime. They're having trouble really pulling away from the Bills in some respects. They kept letting the Bills score. But I'm a little bit surprised that Jenkins didn't see a little more action. In the case of Peebles, I'm not sure there's a spot for him. And this is one of the cases where they could have activated Brent Urban instead of Peebles. I don't think people would have blinked an eye at it because the Bills are a team that really likes to get heavy. For teams that likes to get heavy, the best tonic is the base defense. And Brent Urban is a great space denier in that base package. That would have made a lot of sense. So with Peebles' case, they used him a little bit to try and close out the game, which I think is a great use of him. I think we've been predicting this now for quite some time that he could see action if the Ravens go to lighter packages when they're trying to just pin their ears back and rush the passer late in games that they lead by a couple of scores. Well, this game happened to fit the bill in the fourth quarter, and Peebles on the field, they actually played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad he did. I think that he'll rotate in more as they get more comfortable with him. So just don't like seeing Madubuike and Jones, get completely spent. And, particularly the last drive where the Bills scored the field goal, it felt completely hopeless while you were watching it. And, like you were saying, Ken, you knew when they were going to punt it. I mean, you knew the game was already over. I mean, the defense was just absolutely torched, and they just had such short breathers all night in between getting out there. And you can only do so much about it. I'm not saying I like watching John Jenkins rush the passer. I just think that at some point in time, Jenkins and Madubuike and Jones are severely diminished with the lack of rest.
Yeah, it's remarkable because Madubuike did get a lot of his pressure in the second half when they were outsnapped 50-22. So they had the ball 7 times in the second half. They didn't have a single drive of over 4 plays.
Yeah.
That was so just,
yeah.
Just
I mean, great. Even Kyle Bowler, he would have held the ball longer than that. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah. All right. Additional practice squad signing this week. Cornelius Johnson added. He's a 7th round pick from the Chargers in 2024. Kind of a big guy, 6'3", 208 for a wide receiver. I don't exactly know what the Ravens have in mind. I know a lot of people said he's a special teams ace. He has 10 career preseason special team snaps in 2 years. It's not saying to me he's a special teams ace. Maybe they've got it figured out that he could be a good gunner. Obviously, he comes in the same family of teams. This I swear that all of the interactions between the Chargers, the Jets, the Ravens, Maybe you can even add the Steelers into this group now, although they wouldn't be a problem. It's really the Chargers, Jets, and Ravens. Let's hold it to that. All the transactions that are occurring between those teams remind me of the Kansas City A's and the New York Yankees of the 1950s, where Kansas City playing in the American League was almost thought to be a farm team of the Yankees because they'd make a couple of trades every year. It just stunk. It was awful what what was going on there. But there's so many players who were back and forth, and that was always kind of the Kaiser Soze threat that would be made to a non-performing Yankees player was, you know, hey, we can always send you down to Kansas City kind of thing. you might be making your next start there kind of thing. So,
were you surprised to see Malik Ham cut off the practice squad to make room for Cornelius Johnson?
A little bit. I mean, he's the outside linebacker they have on the group. So if it means they're already planning to sign Clowney, well, that could be it. If it means that they think they've got what they need in Ajabo, I think they got five outside linebackers right now. It's all they're going to have for the moment. But it would be my belief that Malik Ham would have been a reasonable consolation prize, and I could even have seen a world in which Malik Ham is a guy you keep over Ajabo if you really value his special teams play. Because I think he gives you a little bit of versatility on defense. He gives you a fair amount of special teams. And if you have that fifth outside linebacker active, you know, maybe you sit down a safety, maybe you sit down a corner, maybe you sit down Higgins. And you have a player who can still help you, plus a player who can be in there to rush the passer and do some other things at outside linebacker.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's wanted to go through some of the potential inactives for this week, because it's a very complex puzzle for the Ravens, not easy to solve it at all. And it starts with the Keaton Mitchell thing. I'm just shocked, frankly, at the decision to activate Ali over Mitchell after watching camp this summer and seeing how thoroughly dominant Mitchell's performance was. His ability to cut, all of that was just at an outrageous level. Looks like he's got all his speed back. You know, he took some measurements while sprinting that seemed to be very good. I just don't get it. I expect they will try and get him on the field, but the notion that he can only act as a one-for-one replacement for Hill or Ali or for Derrick Henry is at the heart of kind of the flawed thinking on this. I think you end up getting one snap offensively out of a player like Ali, where you might have gotten six or seven out of a player like Mitchell, possibly even more, depending on how effective he's being. But it's only 50 snaps that they ran from scrimmage. And he gives you an enormous misdirection weapon. He's just extremely valuable that way. They have others. You know, they could use Ali that way. I don't think he's as scary. You could use Wester that way, probably a little bit more scary. But one of the things Harbaugh said just tightens my colon about this is he said, you know, as soon as Keaton Mitchell comes off the field, they're worried. The whole defense is up like, okay, he's getting the ball. Where's he going to get the ball kind of thing? Great. I want them to think that. That's exactly what a misdirection weapon does.
Yeah, it's certainly a bizarre explanation Harbaugh gave. I also think that one of the things that makes the Ravens run game great is the misdirection, right? And is the fact that you don't know who's going to get it. I didn't like Derrick Henry getting the ball on the play where he fumbled. That was so obvious he was going to get the ball that Ed Oliver ripped through, you know, Rosengarten and Fa'alele to hit him in the backfield. I don't know. I think it would be nice to have a decoy where you think he's getting the ball and be able to get to him. But yeah, I think maybe they get a little predictable in some of those situations, but it seems like that would have been a great time to use some misdirection, right? Like when you have that lead, let's keep them guessing. We don't need to just run, run the play that they know is coming. Additionally, I'm not sure I really liked Zay Flowers getting the jet sweep at the end there. Why not do that with Justice Hill, right? Or Keaton Mitchell. I know Mitchell wasn't active, right?
Yeah, he was active, Keaton Mitchell. And then of course, if Keaton Mitchell's active, then that gives you the RPO option, right? That you could get the ball out to Flowers or get it out late, get it out off script, run with Amar, you know, run right. With Henry. I mean, there's so many different things you get. And when we just have, if there truly is a guy that everybody's concerned will get the ball when he's on the field, Get him on the field as much as you possibly can.
Right.
As much as you possibly can. And not the non-standard position. Because if he's in, you know, you could be in pony. And if everybody thinks that it's going to be a lead run with Henry, that's the fullback for Mitchell, great. No problem at all. Run, you know, the back door might be open for Lamar Jackson on a play like that.
Right.
The you know, it might be a quick hitter to the tight end over the linebackers on that. I mean, it's just, of all the things he said this week, and he said a lot of things.
He did say a lot this week.
Yeah, I think I probably would not have if I were him.
Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same game parlays, call your plays like a pro with live betting, or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Thing probably bothered me the most was that, you know, it's everybody always getting the ball if he comes in. Well, cut the crap. You
know, right.
All right. Let's talk about a few other potential deactivations. We got a mailbag question about this from Jeff B. Jeff B., thanks, as always, a longtime, very loyal listener. It probably would have made a bigger difference to activate Urban rather than Mitchell or someone else who could have made our defense a little less gassed in the fourth quarter. Wonder if Film Study agrees. This would be good fodder for Friday Morning GM. A great series, by the way. Yeah, he's right. That's a great series. All right. Anyway, here's the problem with that. Urban would have to really replace Peebles to be on the line. I don't see a world where the Ravens would activate six defensive linemen, even for a super heavy team like the Bills. In particular, in the first game of the season, everybody's healthy. These guys are ready to go. It's not like you've got a bunch of walking wounded among your defensive line where some injury might get worse. You could get somebody injured for the first time. That's always a risk. But and Madubuike did in this game, apparently. But I wouldn't think that would be reasonable.
Yeah, I would agree. There is a part of me that thinks if you can get a big lead on a team, that one of the best things you can do to defend that lead is to rotate everyone who's rushing the passer.
Yeah.
So, you know, part of me does think, you know, how much did we use Tylan Wallace or Tez Walker during that game, right? If you had someone like that or someone like Rasheen Ali not active and you had an extra person like Urban, would that have helped? I don't know if that ends up making the difference, but I do think that the Ravens have a unique ability to get up big on teams because their offense is such a quick strike. And there's no better, you know, remedy than just sending fresh guy after fresh guy when they know that you have to pass in those situations. So I think maybe it's a little bit unconventional. I agree with you, Ken. It'd be hard to see a team dressing six active defensive linemen for a game. But maybe the Ravens need to start thinking a little bit more out of the box as to how do they protect some of these leads? What is it that they need to do? And, you know, you start getting to that point of the game where you know, your defense is getting tired. And I hate feeling so helpless like we did on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, going forward on fourth and three was the obvious, you know, option that they had. And it's great that we're at this point, because 20 years ago, Bill Belichick got roasted on a spit for going forward on fourth and two against the Colts in a very similar situation. His own 29-yard line situation had redraw values, same basic, very, very similar situation. And you know, Lamar Jackson has proven to be a weapon in these situations. By the way, if people are thinking it was 80% to make that, no way, but it also probably wasn't 35. So the Ravens' chance to win that game, if they had to punt it, might have been, what, 35-40%?
Yeah.
I don't think it's very high. I mean, it's four down football.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be lower. And the chance to make the first down was probably higher than that. And then they also had redraw value. So it was, you know, they might have forced Buffalo effectively. What I mean by that is to kick a field goal after playing three down football, and they would have had a chance to come back and try and kick for the win themselves. So I'm very frustrated by that particular decision. Apparently Lamar's health was a major concern in the thing. So that makes me feel a little bit better. And the tape does kind of tell that, with the enormous hit that Lamar took from Oliver on the prior play. Apparently, you know, Lamar went right to the podium today and said, you know, I wasn't ready to play there.
Yeah. So he did say he was cramping. I was reading today. He said he was drinking pickle juice on the sideline. Here's something I've been thinking about over the last 2 days as I've done nothing but think about this game. Lamar has had some issues with cramping in the past. There was definitely a game where Lamar had some hand cramping. I don't like dogging Lamar. He's incredible. He really is. Of all the money this team spends, Lamar, you know, you can make an argument that Lamar's probably worth $120 million a year, $130 million a year, right?
Okay. Sure.
Right? He's truly a value. But Lamar is the horse that we need to ride. And I think that if you have someone who has some sort of issues with cramping, they really need to figure out what it is they need to do, whether it's, you know, I've seen people getting IVs, you know, of different sorts. I mean, I knew a guy who, he would go to Vegas and he would gamble for 4 or 5 days. He wouldn't sleep. He would just drink and smoke. And they would have a nurse that would actually come to the casino, to the tables, and give you an IV to keep you going. Not saying
I've
Lamar
never heard of that. And being someone who spent a lot of time in Las Vegas, that's funny. That's introduces some significant liability for the casino.
Ken, crazy. I don't drink or smoke. So to me, it was absolutely crazy. I saw this guy. He looked dead. I saw him getting revived to life. It was absolutely crazy. But I do think that if Lamar is going to be the type of person who does experience some cramping, it really needs to be a several day preparation and game day preparation for it. You know, we just can't afford to be in a big moment where we need Lamar. You know, I get that he got crushed by Ed Oliver. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, again, I'm not trying to dog Lamar, but, you know, cramping and everything, man, that just not being able to go for it on that fourth and three, you know, seemed like it really sealed that game's fate. So hoping that they can figure out something there, whether it's something he's eating, you know, each quarter, you know, they have those, you know, the goos that the marathon runners eat that are packed with all the electrolytes.
Goos? Okay.
Yeah, so it's literally in a package. It's a goo that you can slurp out of the package, and it's basically just salt, you know, all the other electrolytes that you need when you're burning and sweating significantly. I just don't know what it is, but, man, I don't want to see Lamar going down in the third or fourth quarter with cramping. We just can't afford it. He's too valuable to this team. So I'm hoping they've got – something they're working on with him, and just can't afford to be losing him in the future.
Would be a great question for Kadri Ishmael. He does a lot of this kind of training, and he's always lecturing me on dehydration. If we're at camp together watching something, I'm gonna send that question to him. So that'd be good. We talked about Ollie versus Mitchell. Now I think the next one they've got to really consider is how they get back to a three safety dime this next week, because I think that Alexander needs to be out until he's ready to go. I don't know what that means, whether that means he rotates on the outside a little bit, whether it means you have him in a little bit. I think the four corner dime idea, I don't think they can go back to that again this weekend against Cleveland.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think they can go back to it either. I mean, I'd be curious. We don't have the insider information in the building, but I'd be curious how Jair feels after that game physically, right? Not the performance, right? Obviously he wished he played better, but
right.
How is he bouncing back? Is he able to get on the field? Is he moving? How sore is he? Because he is talented and we need to get him up there. But like you said, if he's not ready to go, he either needs to be rotated significantly more, or maybe even sat down inactivated for a game or two while he gets his sea legs underneath him. So, you know, that brings us back to the Lowry, you know, versus Keon Martin discussion.
Right. So Lowry, if you had him, would be the fourth safety, put you in a much better position to do everything you might want to do, which is have a three safety dime on the field, potentially even versus a heavy 12 personnel to have Hamilton in the slot at the same time. So normally I would advocate five to make four for that kind of thing. That's not realistic with what the Ravens have. So they're either going to have Humphrey in the slot or they're going to have Hamilton in the slot. Lowry on the back end and Kane at dime, I think is how they would align it if they wanted to, have four safeties in. I think it would make a lot of sense with Flacco. We've seen Flacco in his time with the Ravens be very careless with the football as windows are closing in particular. Mm-hmm. He has a high level of focus on the relationship between the speed of the receiver and the speed of the trailing corner. And he'll try and outthrow the trailing corner without really looking ahead of the play and takes a lot of risk with the football there. And that's where it really helps to have a dime back. Somebody who can step in the lane, really knows what they're doing, and can close that window. It can also, if you just close the window, Matt Flacco might hold the football if he sees it, and then you've got a good situation as well. So Lowry, I would really like to see for his back end prowess to free up Hamilton to do some other things. And Hamilton made plays all over the field. I'm not saying he didn't. He had a couple passes to Fence, which looked great. But he did very well playing close to the line of scrimmage with the forced fumble, with the interception in the end zone of the 2-point play. You know, his pressure he had on the quarterback where he literally drove back the left guard. Anyway, good stuff from Hamilton close to the line of scrimmage. I want to see more of it.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, Cleveland, they love their tight ends. They love running the ball. You may just want the bigger player in Lowry over someone like Keon Martin. So this matchup seems like it's probably tailor-made for him to get his first game action here.
Yeah, could be. And hopefully we'll see Mitchell over Ali too. You know, another guy who could play more special teams if you need him to, and this gives complaint of, it seems to be that Mitchell can't play special teams. Well, okay, so what? Put Justice Hill back on special teams.
Right.
It's not like he isn't tremendously talented in pretty much every unit you'd put him out there for. The guy certified and knows how to play. He hasn't. I'm sure he's not lost his ability to do that. Was a fine gunner at one point. So, I don't see the logic in that. So,
did you see Mike Green on special teams a couple times? I can't tell if my eyes were deceiving me. I know you may have it there, you may not, so I put you on the spot, but I could have sworn I saw
18 snaps of special teams.
He what?
18 snaps of special teams for Mike Green.
Are you a little surprised by that?
No, I think as a you know, in his position as a backup linebacker, the Ravens need bigs always on special teams, so they have to fill out the inside of both your punt return and punt coverage units. So you need to make sure you're big enough to play defense, basically, when the other team lines up and might run a dive play. So you have to be big on the return team. You have to be big on the punt team to stop those guys.
You have to right. Be big enough and Adisa Isaac was supposed to fill some of those snaps.
Yeah.
And obviously he can't now that he's out.
Yeah. Guy Green's he should be a fine special teams player this year. And 18 snaps, he's off to a good start. Let's talk another one. I mean, we have JT Gray is sitting on that. If the special teams are a problem, let's get JT Gray in there. And he could take the spot of either Ali or Walker, perhaps. Now, Ali can't give up his spot to three different players here, which is about what we suggested. But he can give it up to someone. And maybe Gray is the guy. If you really think the special teams are the problem, you can activate Mitchell and make up for it by bringing Gray back. You will have to sit someone else down. And it could be that the Devontae Walker is the guy. He did have 21 special team snaps in this last game.
Yeah, and it did seem like they were focusing on him, on Devontae Walker specifically, playing more special teams in the preseason and in camp.
Yeah. Zaire Mitchell-Payton and Lucas Scott. I was a little surprised by that decision to go with Mitchell-Payton over Scott. They didn't use Mitchell-Payton at all as a receiver in this game, so it's that much more surprising. The Ravens have only used him in the preseason some ridiculously small number of times as a receiver. It might be once, it might be twice, but he was used a fair amount in his previous years in the league, and he's been in the league now for quite a while. It's surprising, but I want to say he was in the Browns camp for a couple of years before he was with the Ravens. So it might have been as much as this is his third or fourth preseason. I believe this is his first NFL game that he played.
You scored him fairly well, Ken?
I didn't actually score him individually. First of all, the offensive line scoring I didn't have any play where I thought he was partially responsible for something that went wrong. So I have that. Right. But in terms of individual blocks, I don't score as individual blocks in the OL play. Yeah.
But it seemed like he was in there when good things were happening. Not saying that he deserves all the credit for that or even, you know, a decent amount of the credit, but I definitely thought that his athleticism showed, and, you know, his ability to maybe get to the spot a little bit quicker than Ricard. Couldn't lay the hammer like Ricard, and certainly just doesn't have the technical blocking prowess that he does. But I wouldn't mind seeing Mitchell Payton for the first 3 weeks until Ricard's ready to go. I think he's I think it was a decent choice.
Okay, so give me time to look up Mitchell Payton's career preseason record. He's played 420 career preseason snaps. By the way, that's too many for anybody. Okay, well, if you get to be a starter, you shouldn't be playing preseason anymore, such that you get 420 total snaps. The guy who might break that total,
Carson Vinson.
Carson Vinson might be able to do it. Yep. He was used a lot more as a receiver in his time with the Browns. Let me have his total number of this is the best number we have to approximate how much he might do as a receiver relative to a blocker. But he had 25 targets in three preseasons with the Browns, 3, 11, and 11, one in 2025 with the Ravens. So the Ravens are planning to use him as basically a pure blocking tight end. They don't have any, aspersions, or that's not the correct word, illusions that he's going to jump in and be a receiving guy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm hoping the guy can catch. So if no one thinks he's ever going to get the ball, maybe he gets a target, right? Just no one will ever see it coming.
He's the anti-Mitchell. Everybody knows he's not getting the ball.
Right.
That's the guy who's much. He's the bigger problem. When you have an eligible receiver that everybody knows is not getting the ball, and he doesn't bring anything really special as a blocker, like Ricard or Tylan Wallace do, then you've got a much bigger issue on your hands with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But you remember the surprise targets to Patrick Ricard in the Tennessee playoff game that the Ravens won. That kind of set the tone coming out of half, right? Where he got a couple of those targets and they kind of shook the nerves and finally started moving a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe we got one of those in store for us.
All right. Got one more thing to discuss here today. And that is if the Ravens need to make a move at another position. I'll let you discuss any position you like, but I kind of think the Ravens ought to be thinking about making a move at guard. They obviously had terrible play from both guards in this game. Both of them scored basically at the replacement level on the one point above what would have been an F. Would have been a D minus. Sorry. They beat 2 points above being an F. Each one of them got a 68 in terms of their adjusted score. Dellinger and Dalcourt are still out there. For now. So if they were to activate one to the 53, they could probably entice either to come back. I don't think either of the guys on the practice squad is nearly as good. Now, the Ravens obviously don't agree with me on the Dalcourt thing because reportedly he was not offered a practice squad spot over Penning. I don't know if that was truly the Ravens' call or if Dalcourt said, look, I want to look around the league. I've been here 2 years now, and I don't seem to be going anywhere. He might have literally thought that. In Dellinger's case, it looks like he saw it as a fairly stacked roster and thought, I'll get a better opportunity sooner in Cleveland. But if the Ravens went back to Dellinger and said, hey, look, we really want you here. We like what you did in camp. We really want to sign to the practice squad. Now we have a place on the roster. Plus, hey, look what happened to us at Garden week one. I think that would be more reasonable to him. And I think both those guys are potential replacements for Linderbaum in 26. So I think they need to have a plan B they're working on now, even if plan A is going out and drafting a center. And of course, plan A plus is getting Linderbaum back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that the guard spots, it wasn't all bad, but like you said, the aggregate scoring, there was enough bad in there that it really dropped them. Someone who I was a little interested in the offseason was Brandon Scherff, the longtime Redskins, then Commanders, and then I think he played the last 3 years in Jacksonville. He was a really talented guard. He was off injured when he was in Washington, but I think he played the majority of three full seasons in Jacksonville, which I was pretty surprised by. But I think he retired this offseason.
Yeah, he retired.
Yeah, he retired.
I'm not saying he can't be talked out of it, but he is retired. The timing is such. Time is of the essence in the case of Dellinger and Delcourt, because the league will attrit at guard, and those guys are going to be among the first players to be picked up somewhere. When I say that, you know, Dellinger's probably about the fifth or seventh top choice at guard of in aggregate among 32 teams, and Delcourt might be the 20th. But that's enough that both those guys are in danger of being picked up at some point this year.
Yeah. Do you think Dellinger and Delcourt said, look, they have Emory Jones. They keep saying he's coming back this year. I think you and I would like to see him on the NFI for the whole year just to give that extra year of eligibility. But I wonder if it was Emory Jones that really prevented them from wanting to come back here.
Yeah, I think that's very realistic. And Jeff Z seems to think it's happening. I haven't seen any evidence of it, but then I'm not around at the castle and walking around the halls and seeing exactly what he's doing in the weight room and whatnot. That might convince me further. Here's my problem with Emory Jones coming back this year is that each week that passes makes it more likely that he won't be back. Now, already we know he can't be back till week five. So the weeks that pass between week one and week four are no worse than the fact that he's put on NFI to start the year. The value to the Ravens is greater if he can't start practicing in time to return for week five.
Right.
So and then week seven and then week 10 and whatever it is, whenever he might come off NFI. Remember, Ajabo came off late. He lost the year effectively developmentally. He lost the year in terms of his contract with the Ravens. So they lost a year of quote unquote team control, as you would call it. I mean, they'll come to a financial agreement with Jones that both sides will be at least okay with, you know, will give their tacit approval to. But I think the Ravens are going to be much better off at this point, given how far he is behind in terms of continuity and practice with the offensive line and whatnot, if he starts fresh next year.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any guarantee or anything remotely close to a guarantee that Emory Jones comes in and plays a competent guard.
Oh, of course not.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's so far. In fact, I think there's probably more of a guarantee that he plays incompetent guard. Yeah. Right. So it just, I don't get the risk. I don't know. Like you said, once you get to week seven, week eight, week nine, what's the point? And also, you know, I mean, you've been injured before, you know, like it takes time to come back from these things just to get to a functional level of us, you know, around the house,
walking around and not complaining about it to your wife. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it takes some time, but there's a big difference between that and having Dexter Lawrence lining up opposite you. You know, it's just not even the same stratosphere. Plus he's a rookie, so his technique is not that polished. I really, really hope they just redshirt him for the year and bring him back. And if I'm him, do I really want to come mid season, not strong enough, and get thrown in the middle of this? Like, I think you run the risk of looking really bad and really cementing yourself lower on the depth chart next year.
Yeah. You could become a career backup or whatever. That it is. It's certainly a possibility. As things are slated right now, I think it could be Vincent or him that is the number three tackle next year. I don't think it's certain to be either of them at this point. And it could be that Jones is a starting guard next year or not, but I don't think what he does in 25 is going to help him win the 26 role. I think it's going to be more about what the other guys do. Because I don't see him unseating, honestly, either. He's not going to actually unseat either of Fa'alele or Voorhees. He's going to take the job by default because either one of them gets hurt or one of them sucks beyond belief. Not beyond belief, I know, to a lot of people that Fa'alele might suck that much, but one of them will have to be played incredibly poorly to play himself out of the lineup.
Yeah. Ken, how concerned are you with Fa'alele? I listened to your grading on the offensive line. Clearly was a step back. Not mm-hmm. saying you should panic after 1 week, but where's your concern meter on a scale of 1 to 10 with Fa'alele?
Okay, 1 to 10. Okay, 0 is not concerned at all. So I'll give you 0 to 10. Okay, probably about a 5. And I'll tell you why it's at that level as opposed to a 7 or an 8. And then there's a lot of people in Baltimore who it's a 10 right now. He had 5 games where he played extremely well, and he played one game where he played very poorly. And when you look at normal week-to-week variation, it is normal that you'll see a D game within a season. And I could tell you, for Ronnie Stanley, I think might have had 3 of them last year, maybe even 4. You know, he's a good player. And I want to bring this up because it's really actually worth look at this. So the 2024 OL scoring by game I've got here coming up. Okay. So if we go to Ronnie Stanley, he had an F against Cleveland at Cleveland, the first game. He had an F against Philly, and he had D's against Cincinnati in the second game and against Pittsburgh in the Week 18 finale. And then the postseason looks like he might have had a D against the Texans. No, that's not right. No, I'm sorry. The Pittsburgh game was the playoff game that he got a D. Okay, so he did. He had, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 games that were at the D level or F level out of 18, right? And then he got an A against the Bills. So I'm... You know, how concerned am I that Fa'alele has an outlier game like this? Not terribly. I mean, he looked like crap, but he always looks like crap. I mean, he's a guy who just really has decisiveness issues and some other problems that he was able to play well despite those at the end of last year. You know, there were some things he actually did well in the game. I hate to even say it, but after, you know, he looked so foolish around the line of scrimmage, but he made 8 out of 10 level 2 blocks.
Yeah. That's just good for his size. Yeah. 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 And, I'm not a Fa'alele hater by any stretch. I do wonder if people studying a full offseason of film on him can find some weaknesses that are easier to exploit. But then again, he's got a full offseason of film on himself. I just didn't like that it was 5 solid games in a row and then kind of this game.
This thing. Yeah.
I don't know if the Bills' defensive line is – I don't think they're an elite defensive line, right? They got some talent. Ed Oliver's a solid player.
And he's the guy lining up against Fa'alele. That's the real problem, is their best player lined up directly opposite Fa'alele.
Right.
And that was certainly some of it. I'll just say that the most recent evidence is the most pertinent. So that would be why my concern is as high as a 5, as opposed to just averaging his play in with the last other 5 games, or even with a whole season. The trend line was the good thing about Fa'alele. It was the thing that we had that said, hey, look, he didn't play that great for the whole season, maybe at a C-minus, D-plus level, but he played great in the last 5 games. And that's something to really look at, and enormously different player. But then he looked like the old Daniel Fa'alele in this first game. He looked like who he was for the first 14 weeks of last year. Yeah. And that concerns the hell out of me. And I don't want to get over worried about it because it is one game, but I don't want to minimize it either because it was a hell of a bad performance.
Yeah. And Rosengarten didn't do much
terrible
to help either.
Yeah. He was probably worse. And Voorhees was just as bad. When people are all saying Voorhees is fine, I mean, here's the issue with Voorhees. Okay, at guard, is that Voorhees has played in his entire career less total snaps than what Fa'alele did over the last 5 games of last year. Coming into this year, he only played 250 career snaps. Well, first of all, he didn't play well during those, not particularly well anyway. But secondly, Falele had 309 snaps at the end of the year where he played exceptionally well. So, right. I mean, the notion that Voorhees was so far ahead of Falele or there's no concern over him, it's just, to me, it's unwarranted. You have a player who's he's had a little bit of playing time. He hasn't looked completely terrible at it. Played pretty well in that Week 18 game. So we thought some good things were happening. Played pretty well in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Seemed to be scoring very well from PFF. And then we see this game happen and we're back to, you know, the drawing board in terms of what we need mm-hmm. to do. All right, we got to call it here. Matt, I always, as always, appreciate you filling in for Voss, and it's a great discussion when we do. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me at 20 Kid Rock on Twitter.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, please like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. If you have somebody else who you think would like this content, please take the time to tell them about the show, maybe even help them find it online. That sometimes helps a person I meet at the ballpark or something. Anyway, thanks for listening again, and we'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.